Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Over the weekend, I was at home in New York City, and I had a little bit of company. My best friends, Sarah and Tim, came up to join me. We did a show live. It was amazing. I had 1,000 of our friends there, and we wanted to share that show with you guys. So here it is, me, Sarah, and Tim, live from New York, but also it's just the first half of it, because what we really want you to do is subscribe. Come on, get behind the paywall, get behind the velvet rope, be with us all the way. Join Bulwark Plus. Enjoy the show.
All right, should we do a podcast?
Did you get your score?
3-0 Tigers so far. Pretty good.
That's great. Minor league football. Love it. In New York, we don't pay a lot of attention to...
I chose to come here. You know, when they scheduled it across the game, I could be in Tiger Stadium right now. You guys could be stuck with Sam Stein or something.
I take it all back. Go Tigers. Welcome, everybody, to The Secret Next Level. This is a mashup. Not everybody gets this one. I'm JVL, here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell, Tim Miller of The Bulwark. My friends, normally I try to ease us into a show, but I'm not doing that right now. So buckle up your chin straps. Tim?
Yeah.
Mark Benioff is the CEO of Salesforce. He is a good guy who really loves America, and he's in the news. I can't tell what he wants the National Guard to go to San Francisco. Do you have any feelings about Mark Benioff?
I do. I was reading this New York Times article on the Acela up here because I'm a liberal elite, and we were on the Acela, and I was like,
He's just screaming at me. And I'm like, what are you reading?
Like, do you know Mark Benioff? This is how you do 1 minute hate, Catherine Rampell. Here we go. Have you guys seen this article about Mark Benioff? Mark Benioff is the CEO of Salesforce. He has the big penis tower in San Francisco that he's created. He's made money. I mean, I guess this is capitalism. And he's like, you know, he's taken 5% off everybody else's work with his Salesforce product. This guy was a big donor to liberal causes out in San Francisco. If there was a nonprofit group doing the stupidest progressive shit imaginable, Mark Benioff was funding them. You know, if there was like a climate justice fought via yoga for non-binary indigenous, Mark Benioff was funding that. If they were changing the name of schools from because Abraham Lincoln was not what was not woke enough for Abraham Lincoln to be on the school, Mark Benioff was funding it. So that's what he did. He was out there. He liked it when it was in vogue. You know, Obama would come to his house. He'd be very happy as an elite. And then COVID hit. He got upset that some of the San Francisco policies that he was funding went poorly. He moved to Hawaii. Where I would like to read this to you. This is where Mark Benioff lives now. He's lived on the Big Island of Hawaii, where he has bought up numerous parcels of land. He said he wasn't sure how many days he spends in San Francisco anymore, because he's never in one place for more than one day. He was doing the interview on his private jet. On the private jet, he told the New York Times that he fully supports the president. He thinks that he's doing a great job. He thinks San Francisco is a shithole now. And he wants to send in the National Guard. Like the Texas National Guard should be protecting the house, the mansion that he doesn't live in San Francisco. This fucking guy. These pieces of shit. Can you believe how cowardly these fucking people are? Like he is, you are that... You're that fucking, he's either that scared that Donald Trump is going to come for him, or he is that insulated from the reality of the world in his Big Island compound in Hawaii. He doesn't realize that San Francisco actually elected a good mayor. Daniel Lurie is doing a good job, who's paying the cops. San Francisco is much nicer now than it used to be. It's getting a lot better. And Mark Benioff doesn't actually care about that. He doesn't care if San Francisco is getting better or not. He doesn't care about actual policies. He just wants Daddy Trump to like him. And so now he's going to be fully in on fascism as long as he can keep his fucking compound and his private jet. And I'm not allowed to say I want to strangle people anymore. I just want to strangle Mark Benioff, though.
Metaphorically.
Like strangle. Fucking grab him like this. How did we end up with these people, these just cowardly billionaire elites? Like, why do not any of them have the stones to stand up to this guy? Like, Mark Benioff has private security. Mark Benioff has unlimited resources.
I can answer this if you want an answer, but I don't know. Do you want, but you can keep yelling.
No, no, please. What is it? Is Donald Trump's smell he's attracted to?
His musk?
Yeah, that combination of orange makeup.
It's all actually pheromones, Tim.
Hand bruises.
It's all pheromones. Tapping the subliminal level.
His musk is actually not far off from the actual answer, which is, and this is important, and I don't know if you guys are seeing this here in New York, but, you know, when I was starting all of the stuff we were doing anti-Trump with Bill Kristol back in 2017 and 2018, that's nice, thank you. But one of the things that we were doing is, like, we were meeting with lots of donors. And we met with lots of donors up here in New York. And today on Twitter, not Benioff, I saw a number of people who we met with in those early days who sat there and telling us what a psychopath this guy was, who are now firmly on his side, who are retweeting Ben Shapiro and Megyn Kelly. And why do you think that is? It's actually social. Like, it's a peer problem. The billionaires moved over the course of the 10 years where it was, I mean, you'd look at Zuckerberg or Elon, like all of these guys were against Trump, but as their peer group shifted, right? And they all were like, well, Elon's the king of us and we all have to do what he's doing or Zuckerberg or whatever. Like, we now have a billionaire class that is firmly in Trump's camp because A, they don't want, they are too scared, but it's also like social. The same way it was like he wanted Obama to come to his house. Like, but that is an important thing to understand, that the new sort of cultural lodestar for where people go is now firmly with Trump for these billionaires.
Do you know, I was on one of those trips because you didn't go. I was living out there. Me and Bill Kristol went to meet with this guy, Keith Raboy. Do you know this fucking guy? You know him? Thank you. You don't need to know him. You don't need to know him to get this story. This guy was like the fourth guy at PayPal. These are the worst rich people in the world, right? And it's like, say what you want about Peter Thiel. He might be the Antichrist. Say what you want about Elon. They at least had some ideas, you know? This guy was just their friend at Stanford, you know? And he got fucking drug along. And me and Bill Kristol go to meet with him. And he's like, his buttons are unbuttoned. You could see his disgusting belly coming out. And he was talking about how he didn't like Trump. But, you know, he's worried about the lefties. And he says, he goes, look, this is why I don't know who to support and what to do if I should support you guys. I still want somebody who supports capitalism. I know that trickle-down economics works. He's just, like, lecturing us. I'm like, oh, really? Tell me why. And he goes, my chef and my trainer, they get paid way more than the other chefs and the trainers in the marketplace. And so the money that I've made being Peter Thiel's friend has now trickled down to my trainer, who isn't doing that great of a job, but is getting paid that well. And I walked out of there with, I just remember walking out of there with Bill Kristol, and I'm like, I'm Bernie. I'm with Bernie now. This is it. I'm done. That was about more radicalizing of a meeting than anything that I've ever done, than anything Donald Trump's ever done for me.
Can we just, actually, let's just take, because, you know, I am still an unrepentant capitalist. But here's the thing. What they are doing right now isn't capitalism. These same people who are preaching capitalism, they are the putting the crony in crony capitalism. Like, that is what cronies do.
I just appreciate you that you dealt with all these rich people so that we could get this project started, because I can't do it. They're the worst.
Not all billionaires, hashtag.
I think pretty much. Mark Benioff is. He also looks like shit, by the way. You should Google him. You'd think that with all that money.
Being very lookist, Tim.
Am I?
I don't
know. I mean,
you started with Benioff, and now he's going to be like this the whole show.
If you're a multi... And if you're a multi-billionaire, is Ozempic out there now? You know, you can have a high, very high-paid trainer. That's probably better than sending the jackboot thugs in the street of San Francisco for dealing with your issues, I would think. One man's idea.
You know who doesn't suck? Tish James.
He's just okay.
So does Donald Trump have a thing about black women? Because it seems like there's a thread running through a lot of Trump. Well, what's wrong, Sarah? You don't care for
is
this
James
one.
James Comey
bit,
a black
you?
Woman now? I don't know what he's identifying as.
Lots of people do, but specifically doesn't like being challenged by black women, I think. Maybe not.
I think two things can be
true. I'm just asking questions.
I think that can be true, and I think that can also not be exactly what's going on here. I think he is going after everybody who went after him.
So I have...
This seems very clear.
A couple questions here. The first one is there any downside risk for Trump with this and the Comey thing and the Bolton thing? Like, if these cases are tossed out, or they don't get tossed out, but he loses very quickly. And does the public go, oh, maybe that was fascism? Or does Trump just go, look at these rigged judges, very unfair, treating me very badly, and everything just moves on?
The second one, probably.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think there could be some potential downside risk for Pam Bondi. Because there is more and more people are using her as a proxy for Trump. Like, if you watch all these guys, when Pam Bondi comes out and she was like, hate speech, we cannot defend hate speech. And everybody's like, Pam Bondi's an idiot. And of course, that's true. But it obscures the fact that she was doing that on behalf of Trump, who said the exact same thing to a bunch of reporters. He was like, well, yes, I'm pro free speech, but anyone who says anything bad about me should go to jail. And so, you know, when he does that, these people don't criticize him. But they go after her. And so I think she's on thin ice with a lot of his people. And so they will blame her, not Trump. But even there, I think the downside risk is negligible. The only other thing is, I will say Comey, these people, both Comey and Tish James and John Bolton, are maybe the first people that we've seen really stand up. Like, they are, every single one of them is saying, go fuck yourself, Donald Trump. Like, we're gonna fight it. And as a result, I do think that emboldens people. And when they win, it will not have the effect that he wants in terms of the chilling effect, because everybody will be like, yeah, come at me, bro. You can't get me.
Do you think that's true? That the chilling effect part won't work? Because I don't... Look, I think that I still trust our... one of the few systems we still got working is our legal system. And I think that I trust the juries are going to not convict James Comey. Like, I think that they're going to respond to James Comey's argument that Donald Trump is targeting him because he admitted that he was targeting him, and apparently a direct message on Truth Social to his attorney general that he accidentally posted publicly, which is real, apparently. It's still confusing to me that he DM'd Pam Bondi, and in the DM, he called him Shifty Schiff.
He's fully committed to the bit.
He's fully committed to the bit, even in DMs to his attorney general. I think that the legal system will hold in this case, and I think that's good. But I think the chilling effect is so real, and like the hassle is real. I mean, look at Jim Comey's life sucks right now, like sucks, and his daughter, who did nothing, got fired. A successful prosecutor who prosecuted child sex predators and traffickers. You would think the person the QAnon people would want to have in the government. No, she's fired because she's a Comey. He is dealing with this. And I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't think I can betray confidence. But I was talking to Nicole about this, like off air, Nicole Wallace, during one of the breaks. And she was talking just about some of the people that aren't coming on her show anymore. You know, like people that have been very brave and have fought the administration. And I don't want to name them because, like, good for them. And a lot of them have been in this fucking fight for 5, 6, 7 years. But, like, if you were in that first batch of people from the Russia, investigation and all that, I think a lot of them are keeping their heads down now, and I do think that that the chilling effect is working, unfortunately. I mean, I would like for you to tell me differently.
It is expensive. Like, there's no doubt. I think the chilling effect is real. I just also think demonstrating that you can beat it, like, we're in that interregnum right now where everyone's like, well, how is this going to turn out? And this is what I hope for these folks, is that I hope they talk about it, right? I hope that they beat it and then they come out, because I don't know if how aware people are of this phenomenon, but all across our universe, our story for the last 8-9 years has been who doesn't talk that we know could talk. We see all kinds of people we know could say something that aren't. And right now, the number of people who were speaking out before the election who have gone underground is pretty high. Like, they are having trouble finding people who will stand up because all the donors have decided that they don't want to get in this crosshair. So I don't want to discount the chilling effect. I just think if at some point there's got to be a counter movement to this.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be led by people like them.
Yeah, I was talking to Chris Murphy about this. I'm pretty alarmed by the left donor chilling effect. Because that's just not our world. Luckily, you all pay us now, so we don't have to do that anymore. But if you talk to Dems who are really in that world, that's real. Like, people don't want to put their name, you know, because it's public, right? People don't want to put their name on it.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in My Lowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Yeah.
So that's a downer.
But I want to just give voice to the thing that I said, even though it's going to make probably plenty of the room angry.
Oh, yeah.
I know we want to just, like, here's the thing. With Tish James and Alvin Bragg, both of those cases, I think were a huge mistake to bring, knowing what we know now. And I think if they had just focused on January 6th and the documents case, we would be in much better shape. Because, what are we yelling at me? All right. Some people are going to agree, and some people
argue
won't,
amongst yourselves.
Yeah, but I just
can I ask a question?
Yeah, yeah.
Without those two cases, do you think we would have gotten a verdict?
So
in either of the other two?
Here's what I think would have happened. So this is hindsight as 2020, but I will say I said this at the time. I did not think it was a good idea to bring the Stormy Daniels case again. I did not think it was a good idea for Tish James to be bringing the case that she was bringing, although I was a little more middling on that one, because George, who I do the legal podcast with, his argument was, hey, look, if you're going to do a lot of crimes and then run for president, like, it's like, sorry when you're high profile and people come after you. The problem is, she ran saying she was going to prosecute Donald Trump. Like, she got elected doing that. And I can't make a folk hero out of her, because I think that that was an enormous mistake to run saying she was going to prosecute him, because it's the same kind of selective, it feels like, that is like a very easy one now for them to be like, well, turnabout's fair play. And I can understand the distinction as to why that's not exactly right, but I wish the American public had been deeply, those two cases moved more than the other ones, which is actually part of the reason they got brought.
I agree with you just on the Tish James thing narrowly, and I don't have anything to add, actually, because I agree with that 100%. I will say this. There's another, like, kind of a related thing about this question about whether Trump was unfairly targeted and lawfare and the turnabout is fair play element. There was something that was going around today that, like, again, riled me up on this front, which was, it was this, now moving to those other cases, the January 6th case in particular, it was the stated position of Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate that they were not going to convict him because no former presidents are not above the law and the legal process will be able to work itself out. I mean, Mitch McConnell literally said that.
Yeah.
And I think that I would assume we have unanimity in here, that many of us would have made that deal, which on the other side, which is like, fuck, no. If we thought that we were going to end up here, if Mitch McConnell and 7 other Republican senators had voted to convict him, and he never was going to run again in exchange for not going to jail, I would have been happy to let him while out his days in Mar-a-Lago. Like, that would have been fine. A bipartisan conviction in the Senate, and that's exactly what should have happened. Yeah. But it was their claim that the legal system should take care of it. And so, like, in the biggest picture, it's like they're And then, this what we have. They like, did what
he
we
He should have been charged for January 6th immediately.
No, like this not, is what not that criminal case. Some other criminal case that was absolutely perfect, that was brought by a perfect prosecutor that not that one either. The documents? No, not the documents either. No. Sorry, we have to find a perfect. No, not the George one either. We have to find a really perfect one.
Jack Smith.
What I'm saying is that there was never going to be an actual criminal case. That this is like Bolton, when Bolton refused to testify in impeachment, he was like, "Well, of course the president should be impeached, but the way these Democrats are going about it is all wrong." You know, with the mustache.
I thought we were giving Bolton amnesty for all of his past failures since his house was raided.
What I'm saying is that this is ultimately the McConnell thing, right?
Thanks. Go Tigers.
McConnell was saying, go ahead and, you know, yes, we're going to prosecute him. But there was never going to be an actual prosecution in the real world that he or any other Republican was ever going to admit was legitimate. Right?
That might be true about Mitch McConnell. I mean, I'm not going to stand up for the cravenness of Mitch McConnell. What I am going to do, and this is when everyone gets mad at me, is like, I don't understand what Merrick Garland was doing. Like, I don't understand why they weren't. And
no one going to get mad at you in here for that.
But I just mean, like, There was a prosecutorial window, nobody took it, and instead we ended up with those cases which did look much more politically motivated or were novel legal theories. They were, the American public like couldn't really understand them the same way, and it was just, I think Cannon, if we could do it over again, we would not do it that way.
I don't think so, because Eileen Cannon was the most open and shut case is the documents case, and the judge who was running it was never going to allow it to go to trial.
That's true. Right? But there were the two cases, the one where he was on tape saying, find me 11,567 votes.
Right.
And, which they also fucked up, by the way. That was the one where she was sleeping with her other guy. I mean, come on. Like, this is,
I know.
It was just like one idiotic move after the other. And it took Liz Cheney, you know, and Adam Kinzinger to make the January 6th committee happen to move the prosecution forward for January 6th.
This is the problem, is that you wind up going to war with the army you have.
I know, but I'm just saying, I'm not going to make Tish James a folk hero because I'm too mad about that. Nobody did any of these things. And I just do not think you can run ever on, I'm going to prosecute this person. Okay. I think she is the least.
Actually,
agreed.
I agree with you. I agree with you in 2018. I'm moving forward now. Are you sure we can't run on, I'm going to prosecute you right now? Because I kind of think that's what a Democrat should run on in 2028, is I'm going to prosecute a lot of you people. I mean, because we're in a different time, I agree with your point about going back. But I kind of feel like the shit's changed now.
They could, although I would love to hear the case about how they're going to prosecute Donald Trump now that the Supreme Court.
I'm focused on Stephen Miller. That probably is who I want to prosecute. Or Kristi Noem. I don't think she has presidential immunity.
I do think going forward in terms of saying like we will, if people have committed crimes against people, we're going to look at it.
Yeah.
But that is, man, it's not where I get, I've already relitigated the whole thing of the 4 years and how unfortunate I think that was, because I think if it had played out differently, we'd be in a different situation.
Okay, got to keep moving. A week from now, we got a No Kings protest. Is anybody going to go? Speaker of the House said that it is a hate America rally that will bring the pro-Hamas wing and the Antifa people. Antifa is now a designated domestic terrorist organization.
Which is a concern for us, since we were once called the capitalist wing of the Antifa.
Yeah.
Very
Which
glad
is my favorite description
shirts.
Of us ever.
Very glad we did not sell that merch. How serious do you think this is as a threat? I mean, clearly they've decided that the No Kings thing is dangerous to them, so they're trying to rebrand it. But calling it an Antifa joint when, I mean, I'm sorry, I have seen the No Kings people. It's like the Marigold Hotel. You know, it's like the
Del Boca Vista.
It really is like the nicest little old ladies you've ever seen with their gardening hats. And they're great. But
I went to a protest and all anybody did was offer me sunblock the whole time.
Just like an Antifa.
Yeah.
But, I mean, does turning this into, oh, we're going to call this a domestic terrorist, like, is that just normal bullshit Republican talking point stuff, or do you think this is the predicate for something more dangerous and sinister?
Hold on. There's just a, really quickly, the idea that they have been spent the last 6 weeks, or however long it's been, chastising people for their rhetoric and their dangerous rhetoric, and saying that Democrats who use inflammatory rhetoric are putting people's lives at risk, to then turn around and put a target on the people's backs who are about to go out into the streets and say they are terrorists, is begging for somebody to have violence visited upon them in these protests.
Yeah, Mike Johnson sucks ass, I guess, is how I would start.
But you guys really like the high-level commentary, huh?
I'm just trying to reach the people, okay? We're doing very, very well with Wesleyan grads, okay? But we got to do a little bit better with, you know, folks a little more down. There we go. LSU tailgate crowd, not as good. So, you know, I'm just trying to speak their language, not in Cletus' voice. But the protests that are they're coming up on Saturday, by the way. I got that wrong over the week. Just a little correction, self-correction. So they're on Saturday, and it is not like the fact that they have tried to position the protesters like this, I think actually could end up being a little bit of a political mistake. Because it worked. There's a reason why that rhetoric worked in 2020, right? Which was because there was, like, spates of violence, right? Like, there were, stores that were getting broken into, and they could take the video of the worst behavior in Kenosha or wherever and use that to impugn the entire movement. Like, That ain't fucking working here with this crowd. Like the No Kings protests, they're not scary. There you go. I don't think people are gonna be scared of them, and so I don't think it's gonna work. And even if it did work, it's just fundamentally anti-American, right? Like this notion that people cannot gather and speak and protest and march, like. That is exactly what America is. It's not a hate America rally. It is a representation of what American values are and should be.
Wait, don't move on just yet.
Okay, go ahead.
And another thing. I do think Tim and I, we cut a video about this as soon as Mike Johnson said it, but it really has started to sink in for me how much of their strategy is about turning Americans against each other. Like, actively make... And it has been crazy. When whoever just yelled, like, we're not taking the bait. I spent a long time on this on the DC show. I have been shocked. Not even shocked, but, like, I've been impressed by Americans in every way that every, protest that I've gone to. It is a bunch of people who understand the assignment. And like in Portland, they're wearing frog costumes and unicorn costumes because everybody understands that they are looking for pretext to attack us or video of people attacking ICE that they can then turn into something that is a reason for them to go after more Americans. But when they use this rhetoric, it is about, like, I don't think Americans want civil war at all. And I think I don't like it when people talk about civil war because I don't think Americans are in that place. I think Trump would like to put us in that place. I think they are trying to foment things toward that place. And I think the fact that Americans so far have seemed to understand that and not gone for it is heartening.
All right, settle down. You got to feel good.
It's my 9 o'clock bourbon, just in case you're wondering.
So I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the Bridge and Tunnel crowd myself. But I hear that across the river, they're having a gubernatorial race. So Mikey Sherrill, somebody I think all three of us like quite a bit, +8 in the most recent Monmouth poll. My spider sense is tingling. I'm sorry. Let me give you and you guys tell me if I'm crazy. She's running against a guy who has been on statewide ballot twice before. So a lot of people in the state have literally pulled the lever for him at least once, maybe twice. Jack Cittarelli is a pretty good fit for being MAGA, but not too MAGA. in terms of how he presents himself. He's a backslapper. He is, I don't want to offend you and your sensibilities, but he is ethnic, as we would say.
White ethnic.
White ethnic, and it's a really good fit. He's a good guy, you know? He's a paisan.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. His people celebrate Columbus Day pretty hard. I'm a little worried that Mickey Sherrill's running a real safe race, and it will probably be fine. I'm not ringing the alarm bells, but...
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take bad cop on this one so that you can boo me instead of Sarah for a minute. I think that both... We'll start with the positive. I think both Mickey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger are going to win. I think they're going to win... Because the opposition is more excited than the Republican base is right now. I think that they're going to win because in this great trade we've talked about where we picked up the, suburban moms and dads who vote and turn out, and the Republicans picked up the, people who are a little less reliable. To turn out on an off year election. I think that's
how do those people speak, Tim?
Do not use the voice.
Tim, if you were to try to represent those people,
I don't think it's Cletus's. I think it's just they're playing some they're playing video games. How am I supposed to?
People yelling Cletus.
Yeah. How am I supposed to get off of Grand Theft Auto? Here's my thing, though. I think both, and this really is hard because I like Abigail Spanberger personally, and I like Mikey. I think they've both run really bad races, actually. Like, really bad, really safe races that are not up for the moment. And
I wrote a piece on this, and you called me insane.
Did I? Well, I've come around.
Okay.
Take out the shirt.
He was calling you insane because you were worried they're going to lose. Neither of us think they're going to lose. We just think that...
No, it was in the primary. Cheryl in the primary. I wrote this about her in the primary. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Well, anyway, I just... Like, it's frustrating. It's particularly frustrating.
Anybody else have a shirt out there?
Yeah.
That would maybe work for this situation?
JBL's exactly. Always right. Shirt, stand up. It's particularly frustrating for those of us who want there to be center-left candidates that are up for the moment. And, like, this was an off year. It was an opportunity for there to be to have two races where the candidates could galvanize the opposition, where the candidates could reach out to people that maybe have some regrets about their choices with Mr. Trump and the cost of the grocery store and all that shit, and people that could have the energy to fight the administration that we're seeing from the lefty candidates, right? Like, you see it from Plattner, from Zohran, from the AOC and Bernie oligarchy tour, and it's feeling very limp from Mikey, Sherrill, and Abigail. And maybe their consultants would probably say, well, we want to run a safe race. They're blue states. It's an off year election. We're just trying to win, and the job is to win and not to, titillate the people on MSNBC. And I would understand that pushback, but I just look at this bench, and the Democrats keep choosing and recruiting very cautious, very vanilla, very safe candidates. And they need to do something fucking different to reach out to a broader demographic. I think that they. Yeah, she did win her primary. I know she won her primary, and part of it was, and there are a lot of reasons why she won her primary. But she's the only woman candidate. There are five other men candidates, and I think this is then probably maybe a Democratic voter issue. The Democratic electorate needs to be more interested in choosing people that aren't as credentialed and down the line.
Actually, I'm just going to... He's mostly right. I agree with most of that. And the one thing I would say is that Abigail Spanberger, these are bulwark candidates to us, and we tend to know them a little bit. They are stars. Like, they are awesome, but they are running races that are... I think they are meant to be safe, but as a result, this is the time. I just think everybody's sort of missing the point that when you get an off-year election opportunity, you get a chance to define what the Democratic Party is at a time where it desperately needs definition. And I do think, with all respect to Abigail Spanberger, I do think standing on the stage and being asked whether or not she still endorses Jay Jones, and like for a full minute refusing to answer that, like just isn't what the Democratic Party needs right now. It needs people. What?
Courage.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's courage, but it's also just like. It's just. But like, speak plainly. Yeah, say what you think. Like. She wants to drop that guy like a hot potato, right? She wants to be like, this is insane. I got kids. You can't be texting that you want people's kids to die. So how about I'm just going to like go to him and say, hey, man, you get through this. I'm appointing somebody else. And you should resign. And like that's what you need to do. And I feel like this is what people need to see from Democrats right now. And there's an enormous opportunity. And I just wish they were taking it more while the spotlight is on them.
I get a question about the Winsome Sears thing in the debate. Did you guys see the...
I saw it.
So, for people who maybe didn't see it, Winsome Sears, was she asked or did she say affirmatively? It was like, you know, is it okay to fire somebody for being gay? And she was...
No,
I don't
it
know
was Abigail Spangerer was listing off a thing, like a
okay.
raft of things.
You
she
do
said,
the summary for me.
Well, she just said... my opponent believes that gay people should not be allowed to get married. And she was saying she believes in discrimination against gay people who want to get married. She believes in discrimination by firing people in their jobs because they're gay. And Winsome Sears wasn't saying, her response wasn't, that's not true. She was saying, that's not discrimination. And I was like, I don't know, I think firing somebody because they're gay from their job is discrimination. Like, that's kind of like textbook.
So... here's my question. Is that just Winsome Sears being a weirdo, or is that a thing that's lurking in, like, the lizard brain of MAGA?
They definitely want to fire people for being gay. Yeah. They want that to be legal, at least, for sure. Yeah.
Well, that was quick. We got through that.
Okay. I don't know.
But I will say, that was a good moment for Abigail Spanberger, because the fact is, like, the vast majority of voters... will use the idea of firing somebody because they're gay as a mark like a demarcation point for extremism, right? Like Abigail or Winsome Sears. Now Winsome Sears is a lunatic. Like I don't know if you guys
completely.
Watched that debate, but she just Abigail Spanberger never got a word in edgewise anyway because Winsome is just like yelling at her the whole time and interrupting her the whole time. But if you've
what
listened,
what must that be like? No, because Tim is always interrupting you.
No, I think that was a dig at me.
That was a dig at me.
Well, we don't even know who you're digging at right now.
I'm standing up for you.
Oh, he does. He's fine. He's fine.
It's Sam.
Okay, yeah. If we have to have a fight about who's the biggest interruptosaurus, let me tell you what. It's George.
All right, continue.
Winsome Sears is a lunatic is where
oh,
you're
yeah,
going.
Thank you. I mean, she is like all of the 2022 candidates, which is why I think just to your point about Mikey Sherrill, that race is a little more worrisome than the Virginia race because people don't want to vote for Winsome Sears. Like, she's a nut job.
She's a nut job, and I guess this is my point. This is a frustrating thing, and I don't think it's really in either Abigail or Mikey's like demeanor or character, which I respect and get, but people want people to be fucking mad right now, you know? And like, that is my problem. Like, you are running against somebody who like wants to be able to fire people from their job because they're gay in a state where tons of people are getting fired from their job by the government right now, illegally, and sent out into the street at a time where they acted like they wanted to help the economy, but the costs are up for everybody, and that they want to punish and menace people in their community. And this is fucking bullshit, and Democrats need to nominate people who are going to be able to channel people's anger and also say, I am going to fight for you against these assholes that are trying to... go after you across whatever you want to choose, whether it's healthcare or the rifts at the federal government or firing people because they're gay. And you know, there's just a lot of front row class kids in the Democratic Party right now that have...
Yeah, they needed to be like us.
In the back.
Who never took a math class and...
Yes.
Smoked too much weed.
Yes. Smoked weed in class.
That's why we're podcasters and not politicians.
Dipping.
Wow.
Not JVL, though. JVL thought it was going to go on his permanent record if he did any drugs.
We've had very different life experiences. So one of the reasons I've been so concerned about Mikey and Abigail, as if I know these people, is because, so you did a focus group out today with another wonderful guest who isn't me.
I'm not letting you near voters anymore.
Full season without me on a focus group. Just denying the people what they want. And
should we talk about the ratings? Which focus group has the best ratings?
Yes, which focus groups wind up with the best ratings, Sarah?
His. No, I'm just kidding, yours. I don't know, actually.
It's mine. People want, what people want is somebody on the show who is trying to kill the voters.
I know.
That's what the people want. Okay.
What they really want, so, well, we need a champagne tier, which is Kool-Aid Man, JVL. <I know. laughs> Comes through the middle. Well,
we're actually punking the focus group people. They only think they're in a focus group. They're just there talking, and then I come in.
Oh. You're an idiot! You're unserious.
Anyway, today's episode is swing voters, and they were almost universally disappointed with Trump. Like, their average grade was a C for Donald Trump. And what
so I'm saying, there's a chance
they might not vote for him in 2028.
What I found so interesting about this is that they came at him from different angles. Like, they were not all upset about the same thing. So there were some people who were upset the prices were still high. Some people who were upset because he wasn't doing any of the things he said he was going to do. They were like, but I just thought the economy would be good, like magic, and now it's not good. Why economy not good? And I feel very bad for these people. I would never imitate how they spoke. And there was a lady who was very happy with what he was doing domestically, but very unhappy that we were still giving money to Ukraine. You know,
okay.
I wonder who
we'll take her.
And then there
we're not going to make her Secretary of State. We just want her not to vote for the Republicans.
And then there were people who were upset. They wanted the border closed, and they want to get rid of immigrants. But maybe I don't want to see it. Right? Which I think was basically what it bordered down to, right? I really don't want to have all these immigrants here, but do I have to see you, like, grabbing them and beating on them? I mean, wouldn't it be more civilized if that could be done in private? I don't know. Were you as heartened by this as I was?
It is funny the way you and I can watch the same groups of people and our takeaways be so different. Although it's nice that you were heartened by them.
Just real quick, who are they? What kind of swing voters are they? Who
so
are they talking
about?
So these
were mostly Biden to Trump voters of different stripes. We did kind of a smorgasbord with Andrew.
The types of people that looked at January 6th and said, was into that. I wasn't into them in November, but now
Ooh,
that we're storming the Capitol.
Insurrections? Oh, maybe an insurrection.
I'm going to give it a second look. I'm putting my mic down. I'm sorry. You take it from here. I'm going to take a break.
To me, actually, the most interesting thing from these groups was the way in which voters do something that we often don't do, which is that they take some things from column A, and they're like, I don't like these things. I think, and it is, take your pick. They all have a different thing that they think is bad about what Trump is doing. What we don't do, though, that these voters do, is say, but there's a handful of things I do like that he's doing, and I'm going to balance these two things out. And so what I always think is interesting is there'll people be like, I think he's going too far on immigration, but I'm glad he closed the border. Or they'll be like, this one is always the one that, and I actually get this one a lot, which is, I'm so angry about prices, I'm so angry about how expensive things are, he said he was going to lower prices, but I'm glad you can't transition, you know, do a sex transition anymore. And I'm like, is that, like, does it matter to you so much what somebody else does with their body that, like, you're going to continue to just be that poor?
The answer is yes, it does.
But that is I think the difference between a very swingy voter and people who are sort of like hardcore against Trump is that like we only see the column A of all the bad things, and we don't have a thing over here. But what makes them swingy is that they have these different things, and so there's things that he's doing that they like. And I think people are going to have to at least take into account what it is that he's doing that they like, even though I think for us, I know certainly for me, I'm like, I don't understand your calculation. It is very difficult for me to understand how one could be like, I'll take fascism so trans kids can't play soccer. And I think that's a super weird trade. But I also think that, you know, the idea that people... to understand that people want the border closed, but do not think that they want this cruel deportation is a very important thing to know about how voters are evaluating immigration.
I have a friend in media who I won't name, who was in the anti-anti tribe. And I remember in 2020, he was explaining to me that, sure, I mean, the Trump administration had been just deeply embarrassing in many ways, but he did issue that architecture order mandating classical architecture for federal buildings. And you know, that's pretty good.
I mean, the federal buildings do dampen the spirit.
These fucking guys. All right, I want to change things up a little bit and do something weird.
Do.
I would like to talk about three MAGAs who I think, one of whom I genuinely love. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Thank you.
Okay. Your wife is here at the show tonight. Hey, Shannon, so I'm not going to make my follow-up joke on this. We can all have it in our hearts.
One of whom...
she's wearing a Sarah's Always Right shirt right now. There we go. Little known fact, JVL's wife texts me frequently to tell me I am, in fact, always right.
Same. So, then we have Laura Loomer, who just disavowed the Trump administration over the Qatari airbase in Colorado. Good on her. Laura Loomer, making a lot of sense lately.
To be fair, this is just her being like, no more brown people.
I seem to remember Laura Loomer stepping in to defend the honor of one Tim Miller.
That's true. Laura Loomer saved me from a rabid, drunk Carrie Lake at a bar in Arizona. I was about to get
and
clawed.
Then, Candace Owens put Dinesh D'Souza into the cuck chair. Here's the thing.
It was so good. You hate
I
to hand
think
it to
that
Candace.
Each of these ladies sincerely believes their own bullshit. And I kind of.
Sorry,
love them
you're
for
not
it.
Listening to Candace Owens' podcast. It is impossible
Candace,
for her.
Candace
to believe.
Reported, do you mean that you don't think she had a prophetic dream?
I don't know. I don't think she really thinks she had a seance with Charlie Kirk and where he told her that the Jews killed him. I don't believe she really thinks that. I also don't believe she really thinks that Brigitte Macron was part of the Stanford Prison Project back when she was a man. I mean, I guess it's possible, but she would have to be completely psychotic.
Okay, so we'll take Candace off of it. Maybe we should take Loomer off of it, too. But at least with Marjorie Taylor Greene, can you guys give me that this is somebody we can work with? Because unlike Marco Rubio and Hugh Hewitt and all these other fucking people, she is who she is, and she's genuine.
Sarah, I'm going to agree with JVL. So do you want to hear me first before you go, or do you want to go first?
No, please. Tell me why you agree with him. Why?
I agree with JVL across for two things. And here's the first thing that is going to sound like a joke, but it is serious. And that is this, that we are now in, how long are we? Month 10? Are we in month 10 yet? Almost month 9, 9.5, 10? You know, a couple hundred days into this. And Donald Trump is sending people to foreign gulags and firing people and kicking people off their health care and stealing money and has his own... he's just done all of these offenses to the human spirit, okay? And all of these offenses to everyone's conscience. And they've been all on TV and right in front of our eyes. And there are, 270-some-odd Republicans in the House of Representatives? And only one... has woken up one morning, looked in the mirror, and said, I don't think I can sleep well at night with some of the things that he's doing. And that, somehow, is Marjorie Taylor Greene. And the thing that bothers her is the healthcare prices are going up, which is, okay, that's not the one I would have picked, but I share her view that it's not a good policy. And that's interesting to me, that like she has felt that compelled to speak out about a question of moral conscience. So that's one. And number two is it's the right wedge. It's a good wedge. She went on this guy Tim Dillon's podcast. I've been obsessed with Tim Dillon because he was a MAGA guy. He had dinner with J.D. Vance, and he is hitting Trump from the MAGA populist angle. And that is the way to hit him. He's going on our show, and they had her on, and the two of them, and they're like, they're sending our... That's like why the Ukraine lady I'm not mad at. He's like, they're taking our money, and they're sending it to Ukraine, and they're sending fucking jackbooted thugs into the streets of the cities, and they're paying them to mulch, and I want that money. That money should be going to healthcare for MAGA whites. And that's probably the... That's probably the best way to break up the coalition. And so we are going to need Marjorie. I'm with JVL, sorry.
So Sarah, in a way, you might say that Marjorie Taylor Greene is the greatest hero of them all.
Or maybe the person that can bring the country together like you've always been wanting. You've been saying that, you know, we're going to have to do it.
New leaders emerge.
Here's the thing. They know what I'm going to say because I said this. JBL's been on this Marjorie Taylor Greene thing, and I don't know if I can do 3 years of this. This is like the...
Buckle up, best friend.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is she didn't wake up one day and say, oh, my conscience demands this of me. Like, what is... What? No. Marjorie Taylor Greene... Here's the thing. Marjorie Taylor Greene is astute about politics. And when she, yes, she is. Marjorie Taylor Greene understands the MAGA base now, the new MAGA base, better than Trump does. And here's what she sees. She sees a political future for herself in a post-Trump world. And she and Tucker Carlson are going to form like the Jewish space lasers, don't fund Ukraine, Candace Owen is right. Coalition, and that is going to have some juice. And I'll tell you the scariest thing about it is that it is going to make the Marco Rubio J.D. Vance ticket look positively normal by comparison. And when you, I just want to tell you, I'm glad you're going to commit to this bit because she's going to do so many insane things over the next 3 years that are going to really test your commitment to this.
I
know she went on CNN one time, but Marjorie Taylor Greene has not gotten normal or good.
No kayfabe. I would take Marjorie Taylor Greene over J.D. Vance every damn day. And it's not even close. I mean, in terms of just like who would be less dangerous for the country. No?
I mean, there's...
Is that a...
I mean, are these our choices? I'm not choosing between these two people. Yeah.
It may well be our choice.
Or Marco. Marco, JD, or Marjorie? You have to pick one.
Well, that's interesting because...
We're not allowed to do FMK anymore because the government is watching. But whatever it would be, you know, kiss, hug, rub their face in the dirt. JD Vance is getting rubbed the face in the dirt for me.
I agree.
Yeah. I will not,
we're not going to sit up here with everybody being like, I understand you don't actually think she's the greatest hero of our time, but this idea of at least she means it. Okay.
She's on a journey of self-discovery and I'm here for it. So.
This is like the Fetterman bit. How'd that go?
Boom. How many of you have filled out your Colin Lamb apology, Connor Lamb apology forms?
In retrospect. If you want to hear the rest of the show, become a paid member. Join Bulwark Plus. Come ride with us. You'll thank me for it.